wild a chance of living is going down. What the f*** is the basis? I'm saying never no more. The solution for the poor, recruit them for the war. They kicked in the door, waving the 4-5 cal. 1 million died, I survived, now alive. I reside where the struggle and the hustle coincide. In this moment in time, a shift in the tide. Get the blindfold lifted from your eyes and see what we see and stop pretending it's alright, man. My wounded eyes seen through the lies, many soon to die. Who am I? A student, I study to survive. Wounded eyes seen through the lies, many soon to die. Who am I? A student, I study to survive. Wounded eyes seen through the lies, many brutalized. So we rise and we fight for the future, we strive. Wounded eyes seen through the lies, many soon to die. Who am I? Who am I, y'all?
Yeah, yeah. Sending this one out. This one out.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
In a major new report, Human Rights Watch has accused Israel of committing acts of extermination and genocide by deliberately restricting safe water for drinking and sanitation to the Gaza Strip. Tirana Hassan, the executive director at Human Rights Watch, said, quote, "This isn't just negligence. It's a calculated policy of deprivation that's led to the deaths of thousands from dehydration and disease. That's nothing short of the crime against humanity of extermination and an act of genocide," she said. The report details how Israel has cut off water and blocked fuel, food, and humanitarian aid from entering the Gaza Strip. In addition, Human Rights Watch accused Israel of deliberately destroying and damaging water and sanitation infrastructure, as well as water repair materials. Israel has rejected the Human Rights Watch findings, saying, quote, "The truth is the complete opposite of HRW's lies." But just in the past day, the United Nations said Israel had once again denied requests to deliver aid to Palestinians in Beit Hanun, Beit Lahia, and Jabalia, areas that have been under Israeli siege for months.
We go right now to Bill Van Esveld, acting Israel and Palestine Associate Director at Human Rights Watch. He helped edit the Human Rights Watch report just out today, titled "Extermination and Acts of Genocide, Israel Deliberately Depriving Palestinians in Gaza of Water." He's joining us from Athens, Greece. Bill, thanks so much for being with us. Why don't you lay out your findings?
Thank you very much for having me on this issue. I think this report lays out a clear state policy of depriving people in Gaza of water. So we looked at four different ways in which all access has been controlled and restricted. First, there are the water pipelines that come from Israel to Gaza. They supply only about 20% of the water in Gaza, but about 50% of the drinking water, because Gaza's aquifer underground has been completely contaminated over years and years of closure. So the first thing was cutting off those water pipes. The second thing was there are water resources inside Gaza, so those were cut off too. Those are desalination plants, those are water pumps going to the aquifer, those are water sanitation facilities, water treatment facilities. They all need energy. They need electricity, they need fuel. Israel cut off electricity and fuel within the first few days of the war, but that wasn't enough. Four of those six water treatment plants I was talking about in Gaza had solar panel fields that were their source of electricity in case electricity got cut off, because electricity has been terrible in Gaza for many years as a result of the siege. It wasn't enough for Israel to cut off the electricity coming from outside. They also sent in military bulldozers to systematically destroy every one of the solar panels in those solar fields, rendering those sanitation facilities completely offline. And two more issues. One is, you know, the infrastructure of water in Gaza has been so destroyed and damaged by the hostilities that it needs urgent repair. There was a major warehouse inside Gaza with a lot of spare parts. It was bombed, and the Palestinian staff who were there with their families, some of them were killed in that bombing. Finally, humanitarian agencies such as Oxfam, UNICEF, and others have been trying since the war started to get water and sanitation materials imported into Gaza to help purify water. water, chlorine tablets, all sorts of things to fix the network. Those were systematically blocked. Even at moments when the Israeli military was allowing other civilian items into Gaza, we were told those were blocked. That is a complete state policy of denial of access to water, and the results are horrifying.
World Health Organization figures about the amount of water, minimum amount of water that's required per person per day to sustain a life. What the WHO recommends is 247 liters per person per day. And since October 7th, 2023, people in Gaza, an individual in Gaza, has access to 2 to 9 liters per day, as against the 247 that the WHO recommends. So if you could say, Bill, on the basis of the people that you spoke to, that, that Human Rights Watch spoke to, what has the impact of this been on people in Gaza? What did medical personnel that you spoke to say? And also in terms of excess deaths, we hear, of course, of this horrific figure of 45,000 people who've been killed by direct attacks by the Israeli military. But how many more deaths are likely the result of water deprivation?
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. So in Israel, the average consumption per day is 247 liters per person per day of water. The minimum, absolute minimum required for life, even in an emergency situation, is 15 liters a day. And people in Gaza have been getting 2 to 9 liters a day on average. Now, that's an average that, in, you know, I should say in northern Gaza, for example, for 5 months, people got 0 liters of drinkable water per day. The effects are as horrifying as you might expect. We spoke to 115 or more people, people in Gaza, healthcare providers. And, you know, the lack of water kills you in a million different ways. There are babies who have died directly from dehydration, but there's also people who are dying from disease and contracting terrible illness. I mean, you cannot bathe if you have no water, and 250,000 people, at least in Gaza, now have skin disease as a result. I mean, 1 5-minute shower is more water than people in Gaza get in an entire week. We spoke to surgeons who said that wounds are not healing because the bodies of the patients are so dehydrated. Kids were coming in dying in the hospital because they were drinking from contaminated water sources. Now, if you add to this the decimation of the healthcare sector in Gaza, that means that people are coming in with waterborne diseases that can no longer be treated. So children dying at large numbers of hepatitis A, which normally would have a death rate, but very, very small, that has ballooned horrifyingly in Gaza. If you add all of these things up, there is a huge hidden death toll. We know that 45,000 names have been collected by the Gaza Ministry of Health, but those are almost all people who were killed directly by explosive weapons or shot directly during the course of the hostilities. That doesn't include the hidden death toll of people dying from dehydration, starvation, disease, and illness. Now, there were 99 healthcare professionals who wrote a letter to President Biden and his administration in October, and they calculated on the basis of the international committee that tracks famine and that has sort of global standards for the numbers of deaths expected, that based on the assessment of starvation and hunger and lack of water in Gaza, at least 62,000 more people may be dead in Gaza. That is, you know, we say thousands in the report. It could easily be tens of thousands or more. We are talking about a mass death situation that is the result of deliberate policy.
I want to go, Bill, to one of the many comments by Israeli officials quoted in your report to determine Israel's genocidal intent in Gaza. This is the former defense minister, Yoav Gallant, speaking just days after the October 7th, 2023 attacks.
I have ordered a complete siege on the Gaza Strip. There will be no electricity, no food, no fuel. Everything is closed. We are fighting human animals, and we will act accordingly.
talk, Bill Van Asfeld, about the significance of what he said here. Again, you have Gallant, at the time the defense minister of Israel. And actually recently, the ICAC has issued arrest warrants for him and Netanyahu. And even with those arrest warrants issued, the International Criminal Court, he just recently went to Washington, D.C. to meet with officials.
Yes, the same Yoav Gallant, an indicted war criminal by the International Criminal Court, was just meeting with the U.S. Defense Secretary and, you know, President Biden's senior Middle East advisor. It's really, really shocking. This is the same man who once said when the United States was going to sanction an Israeli military unit, we don't listen to the United States. No one will teach us about morality. Really disappointing move by the Biden administration there and others who met with him. What that statement of his and statements by other senior Israeli leaders in positions of control and command in the Israeli army and over this issue of denial of access to water. Their statements are evidence of an intent, and they were also carried out by the military and, you know, by the authorities. So it's not just they said something and it sounds bad. No, what they said was actually what they did. That's extremely serious, and that is part of what led us to the conclusion of extermination. That is a crime against humanity of deliberately causing mass death, and one of the ways that it's, you know, that can be committed is by depriving people of what they need to stay alive, such as water. That same crime, which we define and conclude is the crime of extermination, is the same act as one of the acts of genocide listed in the Genocide Convention and indeed in the International Criminal Court statute on its article on genocide, deliberately inflicting conditions of life on people calculated to bring about the destruction of that group. Now, what Gallant said there could be evidence of genocidal intent. Genocide is an extraordinarily difficult crime to prove because the intent must be, according to international law, that you are not just killing people in large numbers, which is extermination, but that you are killing them specifically because you want to destroy the group they are part of. And if you look at the evidence of Israeli military and government actions on water and statements like that one on water, we think you may have evidence already of genocidal intent.
So can I ask you, Bill Van Asfeld, is this the first time the Human Rights Watch is accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza?
This is the first time that we've made a finding of genocidal acts in Gaza. It is not an accusation that we level lightly. We have not done this very often in our history. We accused the Myanmar military of genocidal acts against the Rohingya in 2017, and we found full-blown genocide against the Kurds in Saddam Hussein's Anfal campaign in Iraq in the 90s, and we found genocide against also in Rwanda in the 80s. An extremely difficult crime to prove. Mass killing deliberately to destroy people because they're part of the group. Not something we level lightly, but yes, we found it here.
Bill Van Asfeld, we thank you so much for being with us. Acting Israel and Palestine Associate Director at Human Rights Watch. He helped edit the Human Rights Watch report just out today, titled Extermination and Acts of Genocide, Israel Deliberately Depriving Palestinians in Gaza of Water. We'll link to that report at democracynow.org. Bill Van Asfeld joining us from Athens, Greece. Thank you. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
The U.S. government has agreed to pay nearly $116 million to settle lawsuits brought by 103 women who survived sexual abuse and assault at a federal prison in Dublin, California, which was shuttered earlier this year. The facility, FCI Dublin, became known as the Rape Club due to rampant sexual abuse by prison staff, including the former warden who's now in jail after being convicted of sexually abusing women at the prison. The Los Angeles Times reports $116 million is the largest amount ever paid by the federal government for misconduct at a federal prison.
We're joined now by two guests. Courtney Hansen is a community organizer with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, which helped launch the Dublin Prison Solidarity Coalition to advocate alongside survivors for systemic changes inside prisons. Aimee Chavira was formerly incarcerated at FCI Dublin and is part of the class action sexual abuse lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons. We're going to go first to Courtney. Courtney Hansen, explain the background of this case.
Well, as you said, this current monetary settlement is the largest aggregate settlement in BOP history. And we are seeing this type of legal victory because of the courage of survivors who are incarcerated at FCI Dublin. And our organization, the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, started going into Dublin in 2022 with extremely dedicated attorneys to hear these survivors who were speaking out and build power and solidarity with them across the walls.
And Aimee, if you could respond to this decision by the federal government to pay $116 million to women, you yourself were in prison there.
Yes. Hi, good morning. What do I think? I think this is a victory. I think this shows that everything that has been going on in there was, and it is true, and it's still going on. It doesn't change anything. Money, no amount of money will change what was done to us and what continues to happen.
Aimee, can you explain what did happen? Tell us over these last years what took place and when you were imprisoned there in the Dublin Federal Prison.
Sexual abuse, rape, assault, verbal abuse, retaliation. Behind these federal walls, people don't understand and can't imagine the severity of this problem. We were sentenced to go to prison and pay for our crime, which is no problem. But that wasn't happening. We were paying for our crime and being assaulted, sexually assaulted, mistreated, retaliated on. It went from locking us in our room. I was locked in my room and asked for me to conduct sexual activities or things. I was retaliated, sent by the warden who is now in prison, as I complained. There's a lot of, once you start complaining behind, you know, when you're in prison, the retaliation starts. It's not easy. It's not fun. It's not funny. These are real things that are going on in these prisons, not just Dublin. FCI Dublin went through this. This is across the board. These are all prisons. I'm sorry if I get a little bit emotional. The retaliation went from once you complained to the warden. I myself complained to the warden on one morning. That same morning, he sent Officer Ramos, who is no longer alive, he took his own life, with another officer, Officer DeLuca. They restrict searched three inmates in my cell, then took me to, which is called R&D, to when you get to prison and, you know, you got to go through this process. And I was taken there to get strip searched, to later on being asked and demanded that it was a direct order for me to strip, hand my clothes over, and use my fingers, my hand. to go across. My private part, not one, not two, a couple, you know, more than a couple of times. Is this right? Is this what? I don't think my judge sentenced me to go through this. These are heinous crimes. The punishment that I believe they should get is more than what we have gotten. We have gotten very far, and I'm very grateful. I have joy, but we still have a long journey ahead of us to keep fighting for, you know, for these officers in uniform to be held accountable.
I mean, I just want to say how brave you are, what a woman of courage you are to be willing to speak out about what happened to you. And of course, what this has led to is this more than $100 million settlement. And I'm wondering, Courtney, if you can explain how this was organized. This in no way takes away the pain and suffering from the women in the prison, but how this settlement came about.
Well, I just want to say also it has been truly the honor of a lifetime to organize alongside courageous survivors like Aimé. And this was truly a robust, collective, grassroots effort that could not have happened, first of all, without survivors organizing amongst themselves, and then dedicated movement attorneys, those at Rights Behind Bars and the California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice, and then our organization, also with an inside-outside model, going in and bringing the information and the stories and the demands out. And it's also important to note that this monetary win comes on the heels of another massive legal victory earlier this month in a separate but related class action lawsuit in which our organization was a lead plaintiff alongside individual survivors. And this is a lawsuit that is demanding, and it looks like winning through a proposed settlement agreement and consent decree, policy changes. We need policy changes to ensure that this type of staff sexual abuse stops happening. And like Aimé said, it's still happening all across BOP facilities in this country where Dublin survivors are still being held by their abusers.
So Aimé, just to go back to you, I mean, we're very, very sorry for these this horrific violence that you endured in this prison. I just want to ask, were you aware at the time that there were so many other women who were being subjected to sexual violence as well at the same time as you were?
Yes, Aimé, and it's very important for people to know that it's hard to communicate with each other because it causes shame, you know, you're ashamed. It's embarrassing. But we all knew about each other. And it's hard. It was hard then to speak with one another of the stuff that was going on, of us being seen, being showered, you know, them opening our curtains as we're in the shower, as we're changing, and, you know, we're not dressed. So many women in there that I know and that we now are able to talk about and say, I'm so sorry, I knew what was going on, and we didn't talk about it then. This was not, I mean, and this is just 103 women. We're talking about this prison held a lot of more prisoners, a lot of more inmates at this time. So it was their culture that these officers created there. This was their small world of them abusing us, and it happened every time, every day. You know, you look to your left and something was going on to someone else. You look to your right and some, you know, there's another inmate, you know, being locked in their room. This is a huge problem. This is not just the culture at Dublin. This is happening in other prisons across the board. And it's important for people to know that we need to stop. We need to stop this abuse that we're going through.
And now this settlement means, Aimé, that you and the other women will receive on average $1.1 million, each of you?
No. I think that, you know, it's going to go evenly. That's not the way it's going to happen. There is a judge, you know, I'm not a special, answer this for you, but it's not even across the board, no.
Well, I'm H. Oviedo. We want to say thank you so much for being with us and being willing to share your story. Formerly incarcerated at FCI Dublin, the federal prison in California, part of the class action sexual abuse lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And Courtney Hansen, community organizer with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, which helped launch the Dublin Prison Solidarity Coalition. Last question to Courtney. Courtney, are there other prisons that where you're going through the same kind of negotiation and could lead to settlements like this?
Our current proposed consent decree in our class action lawsuit, which was demanding injunctive relief and policy changes on behalf of everybody, like I may said, who was impacted by the culture of violence at Dublin. If that consent decree gets approved by the judge, it will apply to over 12 BOP facilities across the country where Dublin survivors are currently held. And this is just the beginning. This is not the end. We will continue through grassroots advocacy, perhaps future legal action if necessary, to figure out how to ensure that this never happens again. And we need to note that Biden, President Biden, with a stroke of his pen, could ensure that these Dublin survivors come home for the holidays where they belong, where they could heal with their families in safety.
Courtney Hansen, thank you so much. That does it for our show. You can watch our show on podcast, video, and audio, see our transcripts at democracynow.org, and get our podcast wherever you get your podcast. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Anjali Comet, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Uzbek. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly, merry, happy, joyful, fantastic, exciting, fancy, magnificent, remarkable, special, white, sparkling, terrific, stunning, festive, and wonderful holiday season.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live nationwide, offering a confidential multilingual service 24/7 to connect human trafficking victims and survivors with social and emergency services. We welcome calls if you have tips, concerns, or questions about human trafficking in your community. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call the hotline now at 1-833-900-1010.